Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How much happier would you be if you could live with fewer worries, conflicts, and day-to-day frustrations? And could it be within your power to create such a life? Most of us tend to think of stress as something that just happens to us. But as my guest today will explain, there are a number of proactive ways to keep our minds from wandering to troubled places and to strengthen our relationships and sense of contentment with the lives we have. Dr. Amit Sood is professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and chair of the Mind-Body Initiative at the Mayo Clinic. His new book is called The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. Amit, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here.
So at the heart of our tendency to get stressed out is the fact that our brains are wired by nature to wander. Why does that happen, and why does that make us so tense?
Yeah, we spend, I don't know, if you have you ever read a book, you read half a page and then you say, what was I reading?
Yes.
So where were you at that time? You were mind wandering. We spend half the day every day with a wandering mind like that. And what we are trying to do is think through solutions. We are trying to think about relationships. We stew on stuff. We sometimes even wage a war with ourselves. On the whole, the brain is trying to protect us from imaginary threats and trying to solve issues and do the grocery list in our head. But when we do that excessively, because we've become so busy of late, we just give away our life to that mind wandering.
So what changes when we learn to pay deeper attention to what's actually happening?
You become intentional. Your mind wanders less. So I don't know of anybody who sits in a corner and says, I'm just going to think happy thoughts right now. When our mind wanders, it wanders into all the negative issues, neutral or negative thoughts. But when you become intentional, you can choose your thought. You exercise your right to focus on gratitude, compassion, acceptance, perhaps forgiveness. And that is what makes you fully human.
So this default mode that we have to a wandering mind that may not take us anyplace good, you make it clear that we can't entirely silence that, and we don't necessarily need to, but talk about how we can learn to use that time more productively.
Yes, so we do not need to completely silence. You actually cannot do that because we need to imagine. We need it for creative thinking. We need it for planning and such, and we need to think about relationships. So we need that default mode, but in a lower dose, if you will. How we can train it is by first understanding how it is sneaking upon us, number one. Number two is, based on that understanding, develop a personal program to train your attention so that your attention is more intentional. If you look outside and you see a baby giraffe walking, that may draw your attention, but not a cute Pomeranian, perhaps. So have a low threshold. Don't wait for the perfect rainbow to enjoy it. Pay attention to the little cloud formations. Our three-year-old does something wonderful to me every day. When I go home, she does two things. One is she doesn't try to improve me, and she finds me interesting every day. So she and I have a wonderful connection together. I would like to have the same relationship with my wife. And when I do that, my quality of life becomes much better.
Well, when you mentioned not trying to improve you, that's something that we sort of all tend to do with the people who are closest to us, right? We're constantly trying to shape them and make them perfect. And that becomes a source of stress, even if we do it thinking that we're doing it lovingly.
Yes, you stop enjoying what you're trying to improve. So I can either improve you or enjoy your company. I cannot do both. So the idea is, at least for the first 5 minutes when you connect with your loved ones at the end of the day, let go of the urge to improve. Because choosing not to improve others is a great improvement for yourself. And when you accept them as they are, it provides them incentive to become better than they are.
Yeah, you mentioned the like waking up in the morning and coming home from the day at work or at school and the family gets back together. You suggest pretending in our minds that we haven't seen all these people in 10 days and behaving accordingly.
That's right. So if you're sitting with your spouse and your high school buddy shows up, who is going to be more interesting for the next 5 minutes?
the person you haven't seen in years.
Yes. So you love your partner or your spouse, but somebody else draws your attention more. It is because if you've been married for 20 years, partners become borderline boring. And so in order for you to engage with your loved one, you have to find them fresh. Otherwise, you're going to be in your head. And when you find them fresh, magic happens right from there.
And I suppose we can make this a habit, but initially it certainly does take a great deal of mindfulness to summon that behavior.
Yes, initially it's intentional like any other activity. I saw our nine-year-old learn hula hooping when she was six, and it was pretty, awkward, and it will always fall, and the hula hoop, but then gradually, now she does it so gracefully, it's totally effortless. So you can hula hoop through your life, initially awkward, but as you go it, as you practice this, this becomes your innate state of being. There's a lot of joy in being that way.
I mean, why are we so affected by novelty? Why is that something that we can remember new things better than things we've done a million times?
Yeah, our attention is geared evolutionarily. It is geared to pay attention to three things: threat, inordinate pleasure, and novelty. Because novelty is where growth is. Novelty is where things are interesting. We create new pathways in the brain. We learn. Our reward center in the brain, which we seek to activate. You may have heard of, studies where mice keep on pressing the button because it was releasing dopamine in their head. Mm-hmm. So novelty is that button. When we find novelty, we feel rewarded. We feel happy. So we crave it. It's pretty much like dark chocolate. We just crave it, and it's very rewarding if you find good things novel, like your loved ones.
But if you have dark chocolate after every single meal, pretty soon it doesn't make you as happy as it used to.
Yes, that is true. Well, if you have a pound of dark chocolate every day, certainly it won't be healthy. But if you have a very small bite of it even after every meal, I think that should be all right.
Why are we so worn out by having too many choices? Sometimes going into even something as simple as the grocery store can feel overwhelming.
It is because mind confuses the presence of a choice for its importance. So say in 2011, there were 352 different types of toothpaste that you could choose from. If you go to a drugstore right now, you may find 50 different types of flosses. Now, does it really matter for your dental health or happiness if you choose a low mint, medium mint, or high mint floss? Perhaps not. But mind confuses the presence of a choice for its importance. So when I came originally from India, You perhaps can get from my little accent there. But when I came to U.S. in 1995, I told my wife, remember this mantra. This is really going to help us. And it was very simple. We will never, ever get the best deal ever. And just be happy with that. So when we go to Disneyland, even the animals choose to hide in their cave when we are visiting. And that's just all right.
It's interesting when you say that because it does, it unlatches you from having to worry about trying to get the best deal ever and trying to select the best possible dental floss or whatever it might be. Once we tell ourselves it's not a big deal, it's just like that's one less thing we have to worry about.
Exactly. So the question to ask is, will it matter 5 years from now? If something won't matter 5 years from now, particularly something that is imperfect, then don't let it matter today because your mind is a premium real estate. If you had a lot on Fifth Avenue, you wouldn't put dumpster on it. So with the care you exercise with in choosing your food, exercise the same care in choosing your thoughts.
So one sure path to stress is feeling that we don't have much that we have too much going on in our lives that we cannot control and that much of it doesn't mean anything to us. How much power do we have to change how much meaning there appears to be in our lives?
Tremendous power. You can reframe your life's experiences using meaning as an anchor. So, for example, when I have a cold, and this is more a ethereal sort of meaning, or have back pain, I don't like it. But what I imagine is that, okay, if I'm having back pain, it is somehow protecting my kids from having it. I start embracing that back pain or that cold. You think about an OB room. What is one sound everybody loves to hear? It's the birth of a baby, right? And the crying that goes, louder the better. Go forward 3 months, and it is the same baby crying at 2 a.m. now. And so what happens is the meaning changes. Hmm. You hear somebody lost a unit of blood. Doesn't sound good. You hear they donated it, much better. So meaning is what changes. Suffering is pain that hasn't found its meaning.
And sometimes I suppose it takes a little time to find meaning in the things that cause us pain.
That is exactly right, and we need that patience. It's a bit like walking through the fog. Just a few days ago, we had dense fog here, and you couldn't see about half a mile ahead, but you could see only the next few feet. The good thing was when you drive and walk, you walk 3 feet, and then you see 3 more feet. You walk 3 feet, you see 3 more feet. So that is how sometimes life is. You can only see only so far, but keeping the faith that there is a meaning that will evolve, at least to some extent, I think that allows you to keep going.
So I know that this is what you have dedicated your professional life to, but I have to say, you sound sort of temperamentally like a relentlessly cheerful person. And I wonder, Amit, if you think that some of that is biological, is just sort of natural for you, or if everybody has the ability to look at things in the positive ways that you do.
You know, I was not like that. If I may go back 10 years ago, I was not clinically depressed or anxious, but I was like anybody, a lot of mind wandering, a lot of stress, a lot of craving and seeking. And I tried all kinds of things. I chased money, I chased career, I chased all those things, but none of those really gave me happiness. When I came to U.S., I thought I was coming to Disneyland. Everybody will be happy here. So, but I learned from my own life and from others' life, that is not what will make me happy. Then I realized what is really going to make me happy is gratitude. Until I have gratitude and I'm feeling content, I can't be happier. What will make me happy is compassion. Actually, the pursuit of compassion has made me happier than the pursuit of happiness. Finding meaning, acceptance of reality, and finally forgiveness. Those are the 5 core principles. When I applied to my life, things became so much simpler.
I was fascinated to read in the book research that positive judgments about other people actually boost our own mood. How does that work?
Yeah, your brain cannot tell the difference between getting a reward or giving reward. So if I am liking you versus I'm feeling you are liking me, if you were to do my scan of the brain when I'm liking you versus perceiving you're liking me, you can't tell the difference. Hmm. It is the same reward area of the brain that gets activated. So biologically, when I feel I'm being liked or when I'm liking you, it's just the same thing. So it is such a simple way that when I see a stranger in a mall, if I just wish that person well silently or somehow create a positive story around that person, oh, this person must be a very kind dad, or this must be a grandpa, a very loving, doting grandpa, I've given myself a little reward.
We're speaking this hour with Dr. Amit Sood, who is professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at the Mayo Clinic. His new book is called The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. If you've got a question or maybe a story about how you've dealt with stress in your own life, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can send email to think@kera.org, or you can send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dr. Amit Sood. He is professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at the Mayo Clinic. His new book is The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Amit, I think gratitude is such a fascinating area of study in terms of the way that it affects our overall happiness. For many people, one thing that gets in the way of gratitude is this tendency we have as humans to compare ourselves with everybody else who may seem to be doing better than we are. What do we do about that?
We compare ourselves with three aspects. One is how much we have compared to what we could have had or what others have or what we had in the past, and we sort of get stuck to the worst comparison. How you can decrease your comparison is, one is expand your definition of self. If you are somebody who can only be happy when you are happy, then you will not be happy. You have to learn to become happy just because others are happy, finding that connection with them. Cultivating compassion for others and noticing how much hard work they have put in to achieve, to arrive where they have arrived. Developing that sense of acceptance that, you know, the sun has to rise somewhere else. Sun has to set here, only then can it rise somewhere else. The clouds cannot rain at every place. It will never be perfect for you. And also being grateful for what is right in your life. You've got many things going on, but it won't be fair if all the energy of the universe came your way. And you can be only happy when everybody around you is happy. When you cultivate all these perspectives, it'll be easier.
So do you make gratitude a thing that you do, say, every morning or at night before you go to sleep, or is it something that you are thinking throughout the day?
So on every day of my life, I wake up and my first thought is I think about five people in my life I'm grateful for. I usually start with my wife, and I think about something nice that she did in the last 24 hours, and I send my silent gratitude to her, even though she may be sleeping by my side. And then I think about three or four people. I usually think about somebody who has passed away and try to give them a virtual hug. So this is my morning practice. This is what wakes me up every morning before I get out of bed, instead of sort of stewing on stuff or planning and problem solving. Then I try to sprinkle gratitude multiple times during the day. My particular ritual is a traffic light, because I thought that was a completely wasted time. I used to just tap my fingers for light to turn green. Now I think about three people in my life I'm grateful for. And in our program, we have Mondays as days of gratitude, when you sort of flavor of the day is gratitude, when you try to reframe everything happening to you using gratitude as an anchor.
You know, it's been cold here lately, not as cold as it is up where you are, I would venture to say. But I was driving the other day and I got stuck behind a garbage truck. And instead of being frustrated, I thought, gosh, I'm so grateful that there are these guys who go out there in the freezing cold and take away our trash, and we never think to thank them. And it sort of changed the whole experience of having to wait there for 3 minutes or whatever when I wanted to be on my way.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, that is exactly what I would have thought or tried to think if I was going, my mind was going into the negative mode. We have all these, you go back to life, go back to the day you were born. Between then and now, millions and millions of people have supported you in countless ways. Millions of elements of nature have supported you. What happens is, when you're grateful for them, you feel your cup is full. You feel, I'm nurtured and I'm willing to give. That makes you a strong, kind person. And if everybody felt that way, then the world will be a much better place.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Britt in Fort Worth. Hi, Britt.
Oh, hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. I'm from Australia, and I moved here to America 2 years ago, and I just wanted to comment on what the guest said about suffering only being pain that hasn't found its meaning. I actually moved to Australia to be with my American boyfriend, and how I met him was my brother had died suddenly about 6 years ago, and I met my boyfriend in my brother's memorial Facebook group, and we then became pen pals, and then we started a relationship. And, you know, for the 4 years after my brother died, before I left Australia, there really was a lot of suffering for me in those years.
Yeah.
But it all sort of culminated in me being able to come to America, and, you know, my life here is so happy and I made such a fresh start. And I look back on those years of suffering when I was really kind of searching around in the dark for, you know, some kind of happiness or hope, and I realize, you know, the meaning of that pain, and it's kind of freed me from it. So I'm also very grateful for those experiences that I had that have led me to my life now.
Thank you so much for sharing that. What a beautiful way to sort of make meaning out of something that could have been framed entirely in a negative way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your very inspiring experience, Britt. Our heart and thoughts are with your brother, but he has passed on. And when you're engaging fully with life, you're not disrespecting his memory. You're honoring it. You are trying to live your life based on the principles that he would have wanted you to live. And as you clearly mentioned, many times meaning unfolds over a period of time, and you can only look back and find how the meaning unfolded for you. The good thing is, from here on, you can look forward in life, and when you are faced with an adversity, know that, well, there's going to be some meaning that will come out of it. Maybe it's not, I'm not, you know, privy to that at this point. In Rochester, in Minnesota, I believe that if I'm thrown in a ditch, I'm being saved from a tornado. And I sort of keep that in my head.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Julie on the line next in Dallas. Hi, Julie.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, my question is kind of more on the lines of, if you're having trouble convincing yourself to do these sort of things, like thinking positively, obviously you know that's a good thing, and sometimes people say, like, oh, the more you smile, the better you feel. So I even found myself just forcing myself to smile in my car sometimes. But I feel like a lot of times I can feel gratitude for other people's happiness. I work with refugees, so that brings me into, you know, gratitude each week. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to pull this mind trick on myself, because I'm very a realist a lot of times. So I try to do it, but oftentimes I don't feel like it works, because my brain kind of knows that I'm trying to trick itself.
Hmm.
Yeah. Julie, I think shall I answer?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. Yes, you're sharing a very, very important question here. That is the reason we have more than one skill. One question you want to ask yourself very early on is, do I want to be happy? And be serious about that question. And if the answer is yes, then one of these skills you can find in most situations. So gratitude is just one part. But when gratitude is failing, or you are not able to bring gratitude, bring compassion. I always keep a few images of suffering in my head in order to inspire me, so that I don't get lost in my minor preferences. Cultivate acceptance, cultivate meaning, and particularly gratitude and compassion are the two strongest that you can apply any time. Interesting you say about smile, because there was a study where they prevented people from frowning. So there are frown muscles in the forehead, and Botox was injected. So when people couldn't frown, they actually became happier.
Hmm.
So, and not only that, their limbic area of the brain, which hosts many negative emotions, became less active. So when your brain is happy, your face becomes happier. When your face is happy, your brain becomes happier. One last point is, whenever you feel like you're feeling sort of blah, but you're around people, silently start wishing them well. Silently start wishing them well. This has never failed me. I'm always uplifted by it.
So we can understand the problems and the sort of emotional sorrow that comes along with being one of those people who can't drum up compassion for other people. On the other hand, there are some individuals for whom the hardest person to give compassion to is themselves. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, what happens is this is our instinct. We judge ourselves by the worst feedback we have gotten. So you may have heard I love you hundreds of times and I don't like you perhaps two or three times, but you tend to believe those I don't like yous. We do that because we feel like if we are hard on ourselves, that is how we're going to improve. The key to engage fully with life is to have self-compassion, self-acceptance, and self-forgiveness, because that empowers you to become stronger. Do not judge yourself by the outcome of your intentions, which is what we do, outcome of your actions. Judge yourself by your intentions, and look at yourself with the eyes of the person who loves you the most, and not with the eyes of the person who doesn't like you. Sometimes I say, you are who your pet thinks who you are.
You make the point in the book that you've never found a study that suggests that anger, hostility, jealousy, hatred are good at all for human immunity. And in fact, there are a number of them that show that those emotions are bad for our physical health. So getting them under control has to be good for us, right?
Absolutely. They may be good for population control, making us decreasing our immunity, increase our risk of heart attack and stroke and cancer and you name it. But that is certainly not the direction we would like to go. When you have bad people around you, say in your office, I was thinking about it yesterday. When I'm thinking bad about somebody who is actually bad, I'm not thinking good about somebody who's actually good, right? I have finite time in this life. Do I choose to think bad about somebody who's bad, or should I choose to think good about somebody who's good?
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Pam in Grand Prairie. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to thank you first for having this show, because our family has been making a huge effort at the beginning of the year for all of us to try to speak more kindly with each other and think more kindly of each other and others around us, and just kind of improve our mood overall. I'm not sure that I connected it really with reducing our stress until I was listening to the show, but I'm curious about your book, if there are either solutions in the book or if you can give me some tips here on the phone and for other listeners, for applying these principles with children and pre-teenagers. I have a 5- and a 10-year-old, and I love your ideas. I wish I wasn't driving. I was trying to jot down the things you said about gratitude and those 5 principles. Do you feel like those are things that can be very easily translated into working with children?
Absolutely, and we are doing research with children and applying this and finding this decreases their stress level. Actually, other researchers have also looked at applying gratitude and compassion, in particular in children. The most important part of applying this to children is for you to practice yourself between you and your partner or your husband. And when you show compassion, love, and kindness and patience to your partner, your children are going to, you know, get it. But I think more than that, in a structured way, inspiring them, for example, inviting them to wake up with gratitude in the morning, putting a little post-it note on your bathroom mirror that if you see this, go back to bed and start over if you've not thought about gratitude. We have a daily structure. Mondays are my days of gratitude. Tuesdays are my days of compassion. Wednesdays of acceptance. Thursdays of thinking about meaning in my life, and Fridays of forgiveness. So having a family discussion around these principles. And in the book, I have given many specific anecdotes around children. For example, it is not easy for children to forgive unless you ask for forgiveness from them. You know, we have a three-year-old and a 9-year-old. So you can imagine, I mean, it's so important for us to be practicing these. And the best thing I can do, I think a father and mother both can do for their children, is to love their children's parent, which is, say, for your husband to love you and show it. Hmm. That is the best thing you can do for your kids.
And people have challenged you, you know, when you say stop trying to improve everybody all the time. I mean, obviously, when you're raising children, you have an obligation to sort of help them develop into good people. Can you talk about positive ways to correct behavior that may be undesirable?
Yeah, so correcting behavior, it starts with validation and understanding. I sort of keep this assumption that everybody is trying to do the best. Sometimes they don't know what the best thing is for them. So validating first, trying to understand where they are stuck, educating where possible, and then inspiring them. My job with our children is just one, and with my spouse and with my friends, is to remind them how good they are. Is to remind them of their potential and be the person who can remove obstacles. Then they blossom themselves. Sometimes you have to provide negative feedback. Sometimes you have to even discipline children. All that is part of the picture. Everything that I'm saying doesn't mean that we disregard that bad things don't happen. People don't need disciplining. But wherever possible, give kindness a chance.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Sharmina on the line in Plano. Hi, Sharmina.
Hi, this is a wonderful show. I had a different question when I started, but the other callers are bringing up such wonderful things. I just wanted to point out that we have this concept religiously of doing what we call a sabr and shukr, and sabr is having patience and shukr is being thankful. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that it does make a difference. I noticed that when we did implement this, or at least me personally in my life, that it decreased so much of the stress and me not worrying about what other people felt and what other people said and how it affected me, and just basically focusing on me and what I was doing as a person. And that also one thing that I think made a big difference is giving back to the community. Like, I'm really big on volunteerism and having, like, I do Girl Scouts and stuff like that, and having the girls, you know, learn how to give back and go see communities where that aren't as privileged as they are, because I feel like that makes you more positive about what you have in your life. Wow. And, you know, I'm trying to instill that in the kids. And like the caller before me said, you know, it's kind of difficult. I have four between the age of 5 and 12, and you know, they're each at different levels of understanding, and it's kind of hard, but I'm looking forward to reading the book.
Well, thanks so much for your call. Did you want to comment on it?
Yes, thank you, Sharmina. Yes, I'm familiar with the word sabr, patience, and shukr, thankful. What is interesting is we have had participants from all different faiths now, and every different faith resonates, because these are the core principles that connect all of us as human beings. The key thing that boils down to is, one is, do not postpone joy as kindness. Mm. Being patient and thankful to the other person is not bypassing kindness. And so you want to be kind to the other person, but most importantly, you want to be kind to yourself. Just one more detail. The best way, I think, to implement these, because you get busy and you lose this, is to have a discipline. You carve out discipline, like waking up with gratitude. The second discipline I have in my life is, when I go home for the first 5 minutes, I meet everybody as if I haven't met them for quite some time.
Let me jump in. We have to take a quick break. My guest is Dr. Amit Sood. His new book is called The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to financial planning. Spring registration is open now. You can learn more and register online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dr. Amit Sood. He is professor of medicine at Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at the Mayo Clinic. His book is called The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. Okay, Amit, I want to talk about forgiveness, which is such a tough one for people. And of all things that sometimes we find it hard to get over, it's when we feel we've been wronged. You say, forgive because you wish to heal yourself, end your pain, and disempower the person who hurt you.
Absolutely. Forgiveness is for you more than anybody. It represents a choice that you make to live a more fuller life and not let the other person continue to occupy a space in your heart. Forgiveness is letting go. It's freeing yourself. when I forgive, what one study showed was if I'm able to forgive at work, my relationship improves at home. So I don't forgive this person because he's a nice person or has changed. I forgive because I want to spend quality time with my wife. And as I was, as if I may repeat what I was saying, if I'm thinking bad about somebody who is bad, then I'm not thinking good about somebody who is good. Because I have, if you had infinite time, infinite energy, fine, don't forgive. But if you have finite time, just let go of what you can let go of. But it is not easy. It is very difficult, just as you said.
Well, one thing you suggest is that we imagine that we had committed whatever wrong has been committed against us, and then imagine how much we might wish for forgiveness if we had done the same offense.
Absolutely. You know, I it's so humbling for me to know the how imperfect my own mind is. I get crazy ideas in my head that I know don't belong, and I say, oh my God, if my mind was being displayed on a billboard, I would be so embarrassed. I have crazy desires. I have thoughts that I don't wish to own. And when I recognize this irrationality of my mind, at least in intention, I've had these negative thoughts that others may have perhaps acted on because they didn't have the right training or milieu to discipline themselves. And that automatically brings forgiveness. And one thing we have in our program is Friday is our day of forgiveness. So we have, for your commitment, you just have to forgive for one day. You don't have to forgive for the entire week.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Hasid in Plano. Hi, Hasid.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the show, longtime listener, and this topic in particular is, I think it's great. I had a question that you kind of broached the topic earlier, but I don't think you really went into much detail. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to ask is, what is your opinion on people who, I guess you could say, experience their emotions as far as, you know, happiness or lack of happiness in extreme polarity? You know, like when good things happen, or when good times are present, you know, it's the greatest feeling in the world. You know, you're feeling complete and pure bliss, and, you know, you're on top of the world. But, you know, if even one or two bad things happen, it's as if none of the good things have ever happened and ever will happen. You know, you just plummet from the top of the mountain, top of the world, to, you know, the very bottom, the rock bottom. Hmm. And, you know, this is not, you know, in association with a terrible event, you know, like divorce or death or something like that, just something small or a disagreement, argument, you know, something doesn't go your way and it just sends you straight to the bottom. What is your opinion on people like that?
Not
people like that, but what kind of advice would you give to a person like that?
Yeah, so thank you. Yeah, I think people who are in that very, you know, crests and valleys, they have an element of, it's unsettling to be around them. They have this element of rigidity. They tend to globalize and personalize too much. One bad event, and they're going to think the whole world is coming down, and they personalize it, that it's because of me. If one thing bad, you know, if I have a mole on my cheek, I'm all bad. And then they feel the problem is pervasive. It's never going to change. So if they can stop this globalization, that this thing is now going to be, this is affecting every part of me, personalizing, recognizing that situations change, I couldn't have sometimes done anything different, and thinking it is not pervasive, this change is transient, that will help them. They are too much stuck in duality. Each of the other principles, the principle that I've talked about, being grateful, being compassionate, acceptance is going to help them a lot when they can accept both ups and downs, and meaning will help them a lot when they can find positive meaning by looking at previous adversities in life and then take it forward and saying that if something adverse happens, there's going to be a positive meaning I can find out of it. So when you apply those principles, I think you can become a bit more flexible.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line, we have Vijay in Dallas. Hi, Vijay.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call, and I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Sood, I wanted to ask you about the conflict between the society that we live in and the outlook that you're advocating. The society that we live in is a society that says, grab it for yourself, don't worry about anything else, and don't worry about anybody else. And I've also found that in the business world, when you try to share or be kind to others, they really rip you off. A lot of personal experiences in that direction. So so that's the conflict, and that's what, I guess what I'd like to ask you is about that conflict.
Thanks. Yeah, I know that's a difficult question, Vijay. Right? So we are obviously colored by our experiences. Also, I have one single goal in mind, and that is create a better world for our children. What I feel is, if we were dinosaurs, if we were T-Rex, then that society which you're describing would be wonderful. But perhaps the only thing you could do better is mindful eating. Otherwise, you just eat and reproduce. But we are humans. We are compassionate beings. We all have software of gratitude and compassion and acceptance installed within us. It is our collective evolutionary responsibility to raise little ones in an environment that is nurturing, full of compassion. You can do what you can do. I can do what I can do. I've personally now, with this program, reached over 40,000 people at Mayo Clinic, and we are hoping to reach millions of people. Together, we can create that wonderful society. I know it's not there yet, but I can tell you objectively the world is getting better, and we can be part of the change agent. I totally appreciate your question.
Do people come into your program a little bit skeptical about how they'll walk out?
Yeah, they do. I think they don't know, actually. Many people come having no idea what this will be. They've heard good things. I'm really grateful that we have a wonderful sort of presence now here at Mayo in Rochester and elsewhere in Mayo. But people come thinking we'll teach them sitting meditation or, you know, yoga postures, and they go walk out with this whole prescription for perhaps a higher form of living, and they say, oh, this is I'm sorry, I'm boasting here. They often say, this is way better than anything I had thought.
Hmm.
So, yes, that is quite common.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Alan is on the line now in Trophy Club. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your program.
Thank you.
I'm kind of at the end of the show, but I've been listening to it, and I certainly agree with everything the doctor has to say. I would just like to add that I found in my case, because I was in a relationship with someone who is classically called bipolar, but with the tendency to turn an incident, to move an incident into an area of permanent hostility. And it wasn't until I learned to be compassionate about myself that I learned to deal with her accordingly. And I found that being compassionate about yourself, once it's internalized, everything kind of naturally emanates from that. And now I deal with her, and she looks to me as a stone of strength.
That's a really interesting perspective. What do you think, Amit?
I salute you, Ellen, for overcoming adversity and transforming that into this moment of growth. In the early phase of it, popcorn metaphor helps. And popcorn metaphor is, in a bag of popcorn, when you put it in microwave, 2.5 minutes, 95% pop, but 5% don't pop. You can run it for one more minute and have those 5% pop, but it'll burn the rest. So some people are like those hard kernels, and you have to let them go. But when you save energy and grow, you recognize that an expression other than love is a call for help. That person's negative behavior was coming from their own suffering, and when you can be compassionate towards that, you grow and you help them grow, which is what you achieved. Wonderful.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Jason on the line in Dallas. Hey, Jason.
Oh, hi, Chris. Thank you so much. I love your show. I've listened a long time. My question is about, I read in the Dallas Morning News today about these guys who fraudulently coached people to cheat the disability system and teach people how to pretend to be depressed, pretend to be anxious, and had all kinds of secret kickbacks for that. And my reaction to that was injustice. And I felt people down and angry about that. And it doesn't have to do with me. I mean, they're not cheating me, but I wanted to ask him sort of his thoughts on this positivity with injustice.
Yeah, Jason, isn't it sad that we have people like that in the world? I see them as ignorant people who are stuck in greed. There are three things that you can get stuck in: fear, greed, or ego. And you will find that many people who do wrong things are stuck in one of those three. So these people are stuck in greed. It's unfortunate, but I don't think that should take away your hope for mankind or your own personal practice in becoming a better person. Sometimes these people inspire me, and in such a way that I say, okay, so we have people like these, so I really have to cultivate such a mind, such a heart, that I neutralize people in some way, their negativity. So I have to keep working harder and harder on myself. That is all what you can do. You cannot change the whole world. You can only make a little corner of the world a little better and happier than you found it.
What does it take to sort of break out of fear that may be holding us back from more positive interactions with our environment or with the people in our lives?
Fear and compassion, they do not go together. So the best way to get out of fear is to have compassion. When you truly are compassionate, you cannot be fearful at the same time. So compassion helps. The other thing that helps with fear is faith. For people who have faith, faith is basically, faith tells you that worry is an insult to the wisdom of my God, so I'm going to trust. And there's a very nice Arabic saying, which is, trust in God but tie your camel. So balancing that faith with facts takes away fear. Acceptance also helps with fear. And recognizing that when you are aligned on the side of good, somehow the forces of universe will align to help you or help your purpose in some way. That all takes away, at least decreases fear significantly.
Do you feel like living your own life according to these principles has helped attract to you people who think in similar ways and are inclined to treat you with similar amounts of compassion?
Yes, this is very infectious. This is also a magnet. This is quite contagious. My own personal life, I cannot tell you how. I was going into career in basic research at NIH, and a few things happened that I could not continue there, which allowed me to pursue this sort of passion of mine. And it has been such a wonderful journey. It is so meaningful when you connect with somebody and are able to help them, and you make friends forever. So I'm so blessed to have connected with and found so many friends who are like-minded, and every day we keep making new friends, as I'm sure we did today.
Are these ideas helpful even for people who are dealing with something like a clinical depression? And we're not saying in place of professional care, but can these things be sort of incorporated into mental health care for people who have diagnosable problems?
Absolutely. Actually, we offer this to many of the patients with mental health problems at clinic. We have done a clinical trial offering this, and found that patients with clinical depression are helped. Obviously, if somebody has severe depression, then pharmacotherapy, and particularly with suicidal thoughts, etc., then more intensive interventions are needed. I see these interventions as bringing you back on the highway if you run on the rumble strips. But when you are in a ditch, you need recovery. But if you go on the rumble strip and feel stressed and anxious and mildly depressed, then these can bring you back on the highway.
The new book by Dr. Amit Sood is called The Mayo Clinic Guide to Stress-Free Living. Amit, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. All the best to you and all your listener family. Take care, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.